Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on QR Calgary and More Than Money. Faisal, there's a lot of talk about climate change, and I would say that there is evidence that the wealthy Canadians are perhaps getting in on this game through some philanthropy, and there's movement happening here that I think we need to explore a little bit.
What we've been receiving by emails, messages sent to us about this topic is a lot of confusion.
And contention.
And contention.
Right.
There's a lot of confusion and contention. First of all, what's considered climate action?
Yep.
Where does the money go through to? Are these rich people just helping other rich people with their own businesses? There's so much happening online with this stuff. So we want to bring some clarity.
Yep.
I've got some issues with this to some degree.
Okay.
Let's get into this right away and let's talk about
it. We've got Eric St. Pierre joining us. He's executive director of the Trottier Family Foundation. Eric, first of all, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking some time with us.
Thanks for having me on. I hope you're doing well.
We are. Thank you. And I hope you're doing well as well. Let's just talk a little bit about the Trottier Family Foundation. Maybe just very quickly, you can give us an idea of what it is and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Trottier Family Foundation was established in 2000 from a tech entrepreneur, Lauren Trottier. And we're based out of Montreal, but we're a national funder. We fund a lot of work in science. We're one of the largest astronomy funders in Canada, a lot of STEM work, education. So we work with a lot of universities, really big in the Quebec health sector as well. And we're also one of the largest climate foundations in Canada. About a decade ago, we decided to pivot about half of our grant-making assets towards climate change. And we also move our assets as well. So we're a large climate funder and also climate investor.
So, Eric, educate our audience on what is it considered to be a climate funder and what does the climate action or initiatives that you look at?
Yeah, so we fund a lot of our work is in line with the Paris Agreement. So nationally determined contributions. So every country around the world will try to meet the Paris Agreement targets. So for us, that means like, how do we reduce greenhouse gas emissions? And that's in buildings, for example. So how do we accelerate heat pumps in buildings to decarbonize transportation? How do we advance electrification? I think about energy grids as well. You know, how do we reduce emissions there? And industrial emissions. So often we're thinking about sectors like cement and steel, which sometimes get overlooked, but are fairly important. I think there's a Lafarge low carbon cement factory out in Alberta that's doing some really great work on decarbonizing cement. So we're often looking at various sectors that we can decarbonize across the Canadian economy.
How do you determine the project and the measurement of success? This is one of the big beefs that are out there, is that it's money's being thrown out at certain projects or certain initiatives, and the measurement of success, I'm paraphrasing, not very clear. We've heard some other choice words for this, of course. So walk us through, how does a project get selected and what's your measurement of success?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And there's no clear-cut answer on that. And it's important to remember that every foundation is unique. There's about 8,000 foundations in Canada. They're established by various individuals. They're often established by families. So every family or every foundation will establish their own metrics. So there's no sort of universal metrics. For us, how we look at philanthropy is looking at the very limited philanthropic capital that we have. And, you know, at Trottier Foundation, it's under $20 million a year. If you compare that to what governments have or businesses, it's peanuts. Like it's really small. So we look at philanthropic capital as being catalytic capital. And how can we use that capital that others can't use? So companies are limited from using, or governments find it too risky. We look at that capital as like taking big bets, and how do we change systems? So some examples of that are like, how do we advance electrification of electric school buses? And how do we help policymakers or school boards or governments advance on adopting electric school buses, for example? So we kind of look at our money as being very catalytic and trying to have high impact given the limited amount of resources.
Eric, when you mentioned the word electric, and you're going to get a lot of interesting comments about this, part of the debate that goes on is the amount of carbon footprint to create, let's say, electrifying buses versus switching them from regular gasoline to maybe even diesel or natural gas. that's another option that could be less of an impact or a carbon footprint. What's your response to all the people who say, why is electric being the first thing that's being brought up versus, I don't know, natural gas, like what we can do here in this province?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we're a science funder, right? So we believe in science, we believe in data. So you look at electrification of transportation, and you have to really look at like what's the full life cycle emissions. So, you know, when you're producing an electric school bus, what's, you know, from A to Z, when you build the electric school bus and it's got a lifespan of 8 or 10 years, what's the total emission over that period of time? So we look at it from that perspective of, okay, yes, you build an electric school bus, maybe the emissions are slightly more than a diesel bus from the get-go, but over 8 or 10 years, you end up reducing emissions significantly more than a diesel bus. So we look at it from that angle that, you know, overall, we're able to reduce emissions significantly. But I think more importantly as well is we look at it as like, where is the economy going, right? And, you know, we've got some electric school bus manufacturers in Canada. And so the thinking is, how do we make sure we keep those jobs here in Canada? How do we make our own school buses here in Canada? Make sure that China's not getting ahead of us. And we really embrace these opportunities to create really good jobs in Canada as the economy pivots towards a green economy.
Eric, this is where things get a bit divisive, certainly in Canada, between the East and the West. You know, depending on how you ask the question in this issue of climate change, like if you ask the question, you know, of anybody, do you want, you know, the climate, you know, to deteriorate to a point where we kill ourselves? Everybody says no. So we're all on the same page on that. But it's when you get down to the details, right? And one of the things that as Canadians out West really rally against is this notion that we tend to drive capital out of Canada, say around our oil and gas business, which, by the way, then just goes to other jurisdictions, many of which would have human rights track records and so on and so forth, far worse than Canada. So why isn't there a better coordination between the old economy, old fuel, old, you know, oil and gas business, as an example, and this transition to, because everybody would agree that we need to also be in the future, right? But to push everything out at the, you know, early at the expense of trying to compete in the future, I would say Canada has been under some pressure economically because of that decision. Is there a middle ground that we're missing here?
Yeah, I find it's a great question, right? And it's been very divisive and it's been very polarizing. And I find sometimes people want to make it black or white, right? But I think things are a lot more nuanced. And my personal opinion is we need to have a more sophisticated conversation grounded in reality and people's reality, right? Like there's a lot of economic interests at stake, especially in a place like Alberta or Saskatchewan. So we really need to be thinking about, you know, how do we move beyond polarization? How do we have a real conversation about what does transition look like? How do we think about the interests of everybody in Alberta? How do we bring Alberta along as well, along that transition and create new opportunities as well? I think Norway is an interesting example. You know, Norway is also a large producer of oil and gas. You know, they've been able to allocate a lot of resources towards thinking about the new economy, right? And so, you know, 90% of their new vehicles are electric vehicles. So they've been able to sort of transition there. So I just think we need to, you know, have a really mature conversation about how we bring Albertans along and make this a lot less polarizing and make this really like a national project, right? How do we work together?
Correct. So Eric, if does the Trottier Foundation, Family Foundation, accept donations from the public, or is this purely a private foundation?
Yeah, this is a purely private foundation. So it's established through Lauren Trottier, through his company. And so we're providing grants to charitable organizations. So there's some in Alberta EcoTrust Foundation, for example. We work with a lot of other partners as well. So we provide grants and support the environmental charitable sector.
And there you go. We want to thank you for joining us today, Eric.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
It's a season for philanthropic giving. And that's part of many people's lifestyle and retirement strategy, my friend.
And we're going to talk about this and how do you actually benefit from the tax savings on multiple ways for donating. And if you join us on Tuesday, January 14th, 7 p.m., at the Silver Springs Golf and Country Club. Now, if you register for this, so go to morethanmoneyradio.com.
Now, how do you protect your travel experiences against a weak Canadian dollar? Join us after the break. You're on QR Calgary and More Than Money.